But first, Chef Roy Choi. Roy was one of the pioneers of the gourmet food truck movement in L.A. with his Korean taco truck, Kogi. He was also the inspiration for and technical advisor on the 2014 film Chef with Jon Favreau. These days, he's keeping busy with a pair of docuseries TV shows, KCET's Broken Bread and Netflix's The Chef Show. But there's a long road his food truck had to travel to get there. When Roy was 24, he had just dropped out of law school and had no direction.
I was lying on a couch in West L.A. and the Essence of Emerald show came on. Uh-huh. And I had an out-of-body experience. I don't know how else to put it. And I just knew that cooking was going to be something. It was like my last hope.
Wow. And so, and you've actually said, haven't you, that Emeril saved your life?
I mean, that moment saved my life.
Yeah.
I mean, he physically didn't save my life, but through the television screen he did, yeah.
Wow. Sure. Do you remember what it was you saw that when you had this epiphany, like what he was cooking? Do you happen to remember?
Yeah, he was making a braised beef dish. It was either beef bourguignon or braised short rib or red wine braised beef, something like that.
Now, let's check the sides. You see that? Got a little color to them now. They've been seared. All right, I'll show you how easy this is.
Yeah, and so that inspired you to enroll in culinary school.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, wow, and then here we go. And then that set you on the path. You were a food truck pioneer. You were the first food truck operator to be named one of Food & Wine magazine's top 10 best new chefs. What did you learn about food and about yourself during your food truck career?
Well, one is we learned that we were a lineage of the food trucks before us and mm-hmm. all of the street food and the vendors mm-hmm. and the culture that existed before us. And we looked at ourselves as like the children of that foundation. And what we did was we brought technology to it. For me personally, it opened up, if Emerald's show found me a path, Kogi 20 years later allowed me to really find out my purpose of how to feed people.
Anthony Bourdain wrote that Roy Choi first changed the world when he elevated the food truck concept from roach coach to highly sought after, ultra hot yet democratic rolling restaurant. Was that something you were consciously trying to do?
Kogi started out as a very simple idea. It was just a couple friends getting together and we just wanted to park in front of the nightclubs, make a few $100. And we were all out of a job and I had gotten laid off a few months earlier and we were just looking to get by until we got our next job, and it just turned into this thing. Again, it started really simple, but as it grew and as the flash mobs grew and the streets got filled with this energy and as people started to hear about it and Twitter started to mushroom, it changed me, it changed our team, and it changed the way we all look at these things. When Anthony Bourdain mentions the word roach coach, a lot of food trucks and street vendors were looked at in a very racist way, mm-hmm. in a very prejudicial way. And so they were labeled as dirty, as roach coaches, as things you wouldn't eat, and now they're gourmet. So I don't think the trucks and the food before us changed. It's just America's perception of them changed through the process of Kogi.
Hmm.
And so that definitely was something that was very deep. It changed my life.
Yeah, and then a few years later, Jon Favreau is making a movie called Chef, which was loosely inspired by you and the food truck movement, and you ended up working as a technical advisor on the film. How did that happen?
We just got put together through our peoples, you know. Here in L.A., we got peoples.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
And his people, my peoples, we all became peoples. And and we just hit it off on day one. You know, he needed a technical advisor. The script was already written. They were already about to go into pre-production. And he just needed a technical, just like if it was a dancing movie or a boxing movie, he would need a professional, he would need Teddy Atlas to teach him how to box, right?
The fun part is watching Roy get the stuff ready for this. So I try to watch him when he's preparing, I try to copy him. I can't do it, I can get some of it.
Because we hit it off from day one, that technical advisor role, actually, we became really great friends and inseparable. And so it wasn't about the work or the job so much anymore. It was about the art of the movie. And so we really, it was like creating a band, you know. There were no borders or barriers. We just went in and tried to do the best we could.
Yeah. You've reunited with Jon Favreau for this new show, the Chef Show on Netflix. Can you tell me a bit about this show?
Yeah. Jon and I really love hanging out with each other. Mm-hmm. And when the movie ended, it felt like summer camp was over. And so it was like we just searched for reasons and situations where we could continue to hang out. And then he brought a camera one day and he called me. He was filming in Atlanta for Avengers and Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And he's like, listen, you know, I have this idea. Why don't you just come out to Atlanta? And I don't know what it is yet, but I'll turn on the camera and we can just start cooking and talking, and I'll invite some friends over. And then I fly over there and I find out the friends are Spider-Man and Iron Man and the Avengers cast. And I'm like, okay,
that's great.
Let's go.
That's great. So it sounds like it's a lot of fun to do this.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. These days you're working on your TV show, Broken Bread. What are you trying to accomplish with Broken Bread?
We're trying to make the good in the world, the people that are going against the grain, trying to look at the problems, the broken systems, mm-hmm. Social injustice, social justice, activism. We want to make those topics, those really important topics, a part of pop culture and a part of primetime television.
Mm-hmm. And you also, as you say at the beginning of each episode, food doesn't just nourish us when we're hungry. It can be a catalyst for change.
For change, yeah.
Yeah,
so the show is really a catalyst for change.
Yeah.
And, really, the purpose of the show is to find that balance between entertainment and something to make you think and something to make you care.
Yeah.
You
know? And the first episode is called Transformation. And one of the people you talked to in this episode is Mar Diego, the owner of Dough Girl. Can you tell me a bit about Mar and Dough Girl?
Yeah, it's up in an area here in Los Angeles called The Valley. And it's a small little pizza shop, but really big dreams of, and not just dreams, but reality of changing kids' lives. So there are issues within this country that we don't want to confront, and that's teenage homelessness and teenage opioid addiction. Those are two very difficult problems that we have for our youth. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times our educational system and our support systems don't allow for rehabilitation away from those things. And so a lot of these kids get lost within that void. And so what Mar does is she just brings these kids in, because a big area where a lot of these kids kind of live on the streets is right across from her pizza shop in the riverbed. Mm. And so she brings them into the shop and then gives them jobs and training. And the whole shop is run by these kids that would be sleeping on the streets, but now have a job, have a paycheck. There's like subsidy apartments that she sets up so that they can stay there. And so it's a really wonderful thing. And it's very micro, one pizza at a time, one kid at a time, and then just brick by brick. And now there's like 30 kids.
Jay slept in that corner over there to the left for 6 months. So he would get up, open the ovens. I'd catch him dancing at night, cleaning. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
It was just like it brought it to him. It wasn't about me anymore. It wasn't about the hustle. It was more about the purpose of changing one's life. So the reaction to him coming from the streets, coming into the kitchen, and me saying yes,
yeah,
was like, boom.
You know, we have these huge world problems, right? Whether it's hunger, homelessness, food access, waste, all these things, monoagriculture. And we feel like we can't find a solution towards these things. Yeah. What we're trying to show in Broken Bread is that the solution lies maybe back in the brick by brick. It really does. And there are echo effects to that. And Mar Diego is one example, but as you go through the show, you'll see even larger examples of that.
Yeah, yeah. That makes me think of especially that episode about the Watts neighborhood in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, you say that Watts is a place plagued by misconceptions, and that if you really want to understand this neighborhood, you have to get to know the people. Your tour guide in Watts is a guy named Akilah Shirels. Can you tell me a bit about him?
He is a leader, an activist within the community of not only South Central Los Angeles, Watts, but also in Newark, New York. And he's someone that really advocates for peace. He brokered the peace treaty in 1992 between the gangs in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah, he worked with the legendary football player Jim Brown, right?
Yes, he did.
To broker this peace treaty between the rival gangs, the Crips and Bloods. I'm curious about what impact this peace treaty had on Watts and the people who live there.
Well, it lasted for a long time. It lasted for a little over 10 years. So one thing that did happen is that there's something called peace treaty babies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before the peace treaty, if you were from different hoods, you couldn't really travel to those hoods. Mm-hmm. But once the peace treaty opened up, which meant that now you could interact with the different projects and the different hoods. Yeah. So a lot of people hooked up and made babies.
Mm, interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. So how did the police who worked in Watts feel about it?
On a serious level, it's a beautiful thing because there are too many young people being killed within our inner cities for no reason, mm-hmm. you know. And throughout this country, we're led to believe, especially if you're in a situation where you're not marginalized, you're led to believe that the police are there to protect you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
And in most cases, that's what the system is set up for.
Yeah.
But we have to acknowledge that there is a part of the system that is broken, which is that African American youth and the African American community is targeted by the police department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And profiled, and they benefit off of the violence.
Like the first 2 years of the peace treaty, man, gang homicides dropped 44% in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So then we learned real quick about the economics of law enforcement, that they was actually invested in the problem. So every time a shooting happens, they roll out more cops, and now there's overtime money. And so, you know, there was this cop, man, Sunshine. When we were celebrating the peace treaty, Sunshine had drove up and stuff, and we was like, Sunshine! We was like, man, the peace treaty, oh, man, ain't you happy? You ain't got to worry about no mm-hmm. more. He was like, man, he told me it'd be a cold day in hell before I ever support the peace treaty. He said, I make $50,000 a year as a base salary. He said, I make another $60,000 in overtime. He said, I'm putting my daughter through college on your ignorance.
What Akilah was referring to is that they thought that the police department would be in same celebration as them, that finally we've ended the war.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's what I thought too, yeah.
But what they found out was that they weren't happy because the war actually paid for their salaries, their overtime. And so that was a revelation to them. Yeah. And this was in the early 90s before the last 5 years, where a lot of police brutality has been shared online and through Facebook and through, you know, phone capture.
Yeah.
And so this was a complete surprise because, you know, they thought that they had done something that the government and that the system was going to support and applaud, but they realized they were part of a deeper spiral.
Yeah. As a chef, you see the world through the lens of food, and based on what you've seen so far through your work on Broken Bread, what do you think about the future of food, the future of people, and the future of our planet?
What we try to do through the show is show that there are the problem is huge, but the solution is actually closer than you think. Mm-hmm. You just have to make these conscious choices, which aren't like choices of like completely changing your life and not having fun. It's like you could still kind of live the same life you live, but if you make just these very slight, simple choices, mm-hmm. that it would have a huge effect on these issues that we bring up. Because when you hear the headlines and you just read the clickbait of the news, you think that there is no hope, right?
Yes, yes.
And so the show is like, wait a second, let's get past the headline. Let's go out and search for the people really doing things on the ground, what I call, like, you know, the earthworms and the ants, mm-hmm. like the things you don't see. And we wanted to put the camera and put light to that because there are a lot of movements going on, whether it's underground, whether it's emerging, whether it's big corporate like a Beyond Meat that we cover.
Most people think about meat and say, well, meat comes from a chicken, cow, or pig. What we do as a company is we think somewhat differently about meat. What we think about is really the composition of meat. It's these amino acids, lipids, it's trace minerals, trace amount of vitamins, and it's predominantly water. A lot of cuts to meat are 67% water, as you know, as a chef. So why don't we think about building meat differently?
Wow.
There's nothing in the animal that's so special that you couldn't pull that out of plants.
There are people out there fighting and showing you that there is a way to fix this. We just got to have compassion. We got to believe them. And we have to see the truth in what they're doing. Because they're not doing it to convince you. They're doing it because they know that what's happening right now in certain systems are broken, and they're doing things that they know that can help it and fix it. And it goes as small as delivering one box of organic produce at a time throughout South Central Los Angeles, to one pizza at a time to save a kid in the valley, or creating a plant-based protein meat that could replace sausages, hot dogs, and hamburgers.
Yeah, exactly. It makes me think of the Bruce Springsteen song title, From Small Things, Big Things One Day Come. So it's got to start with
there
small
stuff. There it is. There you go. That's exactly it.
Roy Choi, thank you very much.
Oh, man, thank you. Yeah.
Roy Choi is a celebrity chef and the host of Broken Bread. He also co-hosts the Netflix series, The Chef Show, with filmmaker Jon Favreau. You can find out more about Roy on our website, wpr.org/beta.
My favorite period of recording was like 58 to 62 jazz records that were made in that time.
Andrew Bird talks about the sound he was going for on his latest album. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.